You're asked to examine or talk about somebody with an asymmetrical face or skull. So this child has asymmetry of their face, and my priority would be to differentiate this as being either positional plagiocephaly, a craniosynostosis, or caused by another factor such as torticollis. I would do this by asking a targeted history, looking at any family history of craniosynostosis, inquiring about the obstetric history, wanting to know if there was any interuterine growth concerns or any complications during pregnancy or birth. And then after birth, was there any prolonged stays on the neonative intensive care unit? Are they reaching all their developmental milestones, and whether mum or dad have noticed any other anomalies, for example, in their hands or limbs? Then moving on to examining the child, I'd want to look at the skull shape. This is looking for either triangular based shape or a trapezial based shape. The trapezial shape is associated with positional plagiocephaly, whereas the triangular shape is a sign of coronal or lambdoid synostosis. I'd want to measure the cephalic index, which is a relationship of the width over the length, with a normal cephalic index of between 76 and 90%. Children with brachycephaly have a index higher than 90% because their width is enlarged, and those with scaphocephaly that you get with sagittal synostosis have a index less than 76% because their length is enlarged. I then want to feel for open anterior or posterior fontanelles, check for papilledema, and then moving down, check the palate, check for asymmetries in the sternocleidomastoid, which would be associated with torticollis. Look at the lower neck and chest for any evidence of respiratory distress, the upper limbs and feet for any signs of associated anomalies. These will help me differentiate the most common types of craniosynostosis, if that's the line that I think this is. So any evidence of syndactyly in the hands or feet may suggest aperts. If there aren't any peripheral features, it makes Crouzon's a more likely diagnosis. Wide toes or thumbs is associated with Pfeiffer syndrome, and Safe-Chotson syndrome has an association with cleft palates, prominent ears, as well as brachy or syndactyly. I'd also like to arrange imaging, ideally a CT scan with a 3D recon. And this will do a couple of things. This is an important tool to be able to help explain to the parents what the underlying causes are of the shape of the skull, but also helps in planning any future treatment. If it's not possible to get a CT with 3D recon, then an X-ray, looking for evidence of a harlequin deformity, which is orbital asymmetry, and asymmetry of the sphenoid bone, and any evidence of raised intracranial pressure, for example, copper beating. Then once I've done all this, I'd want to ensure that the child was part of a craniofacial MDT, and this would include plastic surgeons, neurosurgeons, psychologists, ophthalmologists, and geneticists. And then we move on to potential treatments. So really, for treating these, the priorities are to protect the airway, to protect the brain, to prevent raised intracranial pressure, and to protect the eyes. In addition to that, as best as is possible, to create a normal looking skull shape for to help with aesthetics and function and so on. There are no non-surgical treatments that are effective, and so surgery is the key treatment for a coronal synostosis. The surgery is usually a frontal orbital advancement reconstruction, which is a complex operation that is done in partnership with the neurosurgeons. Can you talk me through a frontal orbital advancement reconstruction? Sure. a front orbital advanced reconstruction is usually performed at around 8 to 10 months. And as I've said before, it is done with the neurosurgeons and pediatric neuroanesthetists. There's a lot of setup beforehand, including making sure there is sufficient blood available for the child, or that they've had 6 weeks of erythropoietin before surgery in order to reduce that risk. There also needs to be an ITU bed arranged for after the case. The operation itself is done supine. There's a bicoronal incision and then a supraperiosteal dissection, which is meant to be associated with reduced blood loss. The neurosurgeons then perform the coronal craniotomies, and the frontal bone plate is excised and protected. The orbital bar is then excised, but making sure care is taken to protect the soft tissue, specifically around the eyes, using things like malleable retractors. The bar is then recontoured and then replaced using absorbable plates with drains inserted and the scalp closed. The child then spends at least one night on ITU, if not more, depending on how they get on. Once the child is discharged, I want to make sure the parents were comfortable that they knew signs to look for in terms of raised intracranial pressure, and we would continue to review the child on a yearly basis, if not more, if there were any concerns. Okay, so what if it's a sagittal synostosis as opposed to a coronal synostosis? Well, the treatment for the initial assessment is exactly the same for both. The treatment does differ because the direction in which the vault needs to expand is different. And the main technique for surgical correction of a sagittal synostosis is a strip craniectomy with or without barrel stave osteotomies. They're kind of parallel incisions in the skull, and that allows the brain to expand in a transverse direction. Occasionally there's constriction in the occipital region, and so the operation can be extended with the patient in a prone position going back and performing a calvarial vault reconstruction, whereby the occipital region is taken off and then opened out and remodeled. What do you do if there is a dural tear? So dural tears are a risk with any skull-based remodeling because the dura has to be dissected off of the bone, and this is higher in revision procedures where there is additional scarring, but the dura needs to be closed, ideally directly repaired at the time of injury with approximation of the wound, or a patch of pericranium can be used in order to seal the gap. How do you reduce the risk of recurrence? One of the ways to reduce the risk of recurrence is to overcorrect the deformity at the time of surgery. And the reason is that the skin envelope maintains some memory of the previous shape, and so will apply the forces of that shape. So therefore, if you overcorrect, hopefully that cancels out that effect of the skin envelope.